Now, I'll let you in on something. As you know, they are completely overhauling and they are eliminating the United States government, the Internal Revenue Tax Code. They are now eliminating a lot of deductions. They are very carefully looking at all not-for-profit tax-exempt fellowships. Now, they're no dummies. They have an estimate of how many AA groups that are in the United States. They also know that an AA group is a spiritual enemy, entity. Some are. Entity. And a spiritual entity is not a business entity. They also know about emptying out money. And so, when you have a safety, if you have a savings account, or if you have a C, it draws interest. So, by law, the banks have to report to the Internal Revenue Service the amount of interest that's been paid. Well, now let's go back. Since an AA group is a spiritual entity, it doesn't have any paid employees, so it doesn't have a 75 number or an employer identification number. So in order to open up the bank account to draw interest, somebody's Social Security number has to be on there. Well, since an AA group is not a spiritual entity and it doesn't have any kind of numbers, therefore, whoever's member's number is on there is the one that's credited with drawing the interest. And particularly if it has to do with money market fund or this or that. So the Internal Revenue Service just takes and figures out roughly how many groups, divides how much adds up, how many interest is coming in, and then they can pretty well tell what it is, and they have come up with some very amazing figures. One group got clipped for 90-some-odd thousand. One group got clipped for about 60,000. And they're fixing to look into it beyond what they call a reasonable amount. And a reasonable amount to them is anything they can get their hands on. And so, if a group decides that it's going to have a little money in there, put in your checking account, put it in a non-interest-bearing account. That's all. Because the members of a group or AA are not entitled to interest. We ain't even entitled to sobriety. It's a gift. If most of us had gotten what we deserve, we'd have been murdered or electrocuted long ago. Or locked up in a goonie roost, running up and down them cages with their toes and their fingers, babbling like a baboon the rest of our life. We've been given a gift. And so, as a result of it, you know, they're going to start getting a little bit ugly. Now, you say, well, what about AA at the top? Well, once again, I've been referring that we are unique. And I'll tell you how unique we are. Back when Works was paying income tax for profits on the book, there was not any literature, maybe a pamphlet or two. And they wanted to become tax-exempt, not-for-profit. They didn't know what to do. So Bernard Smith, who I referred to yesterday morning, the lawyer, along with a CPA, a member of AA by the name of Burl Smith, the both of them went down to Washington, D.C. to see the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. And they explained to him their dilemma, what they do and what they don't. and they would like to apply and receive a tax-exempt not-for-profit status. Well, Mr. Mooney, who at that time was the commissioner, called in his aides, and they talked it over, and they said, "But gentlemen, we have no previous experience of anything like this. So we don't know. We can't make a ruling because you will be the first one of this kind." So, but he said, "I'll tell you what you do. You go back and you send me a letter certified where you get your money, who you get it from, what you do with it, and what you do with what's left over." And this they did. And upon receipt of the letter, the commissioner wrote a letter to the director of the Internal Revenue Service in the district on which our offices are operating in, and in the state of New York, in the county, and the incorporation, verbally granting us tax-exempt not-for-profit status. We're the only one that the Internal Revenue Service has ever done that for. And so, unless they fit AA's mold when they go to apply for one, that is, that are self-help like ours, most of them can't qualify because they're out getting other people's money and et cetera and et cetera and et cetera. And so ours is basically, when you look at it, it is a membership corporation. You see? We're all members of AA. And as a result, that's how we got it. And still today, that's what they still do, the way they do it. And they were given special dispensation. Lay out another one. Many years ago, when they're going to reincorporate the Alcoholic Foundation Incorporated, so that it too could be the umbrella for the not-for-profit tax-exempt works and the General Service Office. So Bernard Smith once again goes to the Albany, the state capital of New York, to talk to the Attorney General and the Secretary of State about the Articles of Incorporation. Well, he goes in, and it just so happens that the gentleman he talked to, they went to law school together. And so they look at the papers, and they say, "But Bernard, wait a minute, you've got two classes of trustees. You've got a Class A trustee and you got a Class B trustee, and the state of New York does not, it's illegal because you're not issuing two types of stock." In those days, they were stock corporations. "You're not issuing a Class A stock, a Class B stock. They're all receiving the same, and that is against the laws of the state of New York." Bernard says to him, "Well, it's too late to catch the train to go back to New York City. Why don't we go out to dinner?" So they went out to dinner, and now Bernard and also his friend, they could safely partake of alcoholic beverages. Well, that night they partook of quite a few, and they started discussing this deal again. And the secretary and the attorney general said, "Bernard, it's against the law of the state of New York." Bernard says, "Well, why don't you change the laws?" Did you know they did? That's how we've got Class A and Class B trustees. They changed the laws of the state of New York. It's the only one they've ever done it. And they got a rider as a result of it. Yeah. And so, as a result, you know, so when our trustees declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA's tradition. Now, when newspaper and other media got hold of these facts, there was an immediate and profound reaction To the people who are familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, AA presented a strange thing. Approving editorials both abroad and in this country generated a new wave of confidence and respect in what? In the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one of the most precious gifts that we've got, is the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because they pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible by making financial independence part of their traditions. Tradition 8. You know, here comes a goodie. I don't mind telling you. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Now, spiritual as it is, AA remains very much of this real world in which we live, because the eighth tradition, like the seventh tradition, focuses on that vulgar five-letter word that's not mentioned in either tradition, and that word is money. How many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I'm not a social worker. I do not get paid for talking with you or staying with you while you shake out a drunk. We do this because it's one of the best ways for us to stay sober ourselves. However, this doesn't mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered any AA's mind. Now, in the lean years, our co-founder Bill did think of becoming a lay therapist to earn money through his experiences in helping alcoholics. But with a strong push from the group conscience, he soon realized that he could never hang out a shingle saying, Bill W., AA faith healer, at $10 an hour. So it became clear to the early members that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying the message to somebody else, person to person, face to face. There's a lot of confusion in that particular statement. Many members of AA don't know the difference. They think that they're getting the AA message in a treatment center by paid professionals in the field of alcoholism in the treatment center. No, they are getting the message of getting physically sober. The AA message and recovery is in an AA group to where you don't pay for it. Period. This is where we get it. Because it is here that we learn from sober members of AA who have been living our program far longer than we have on a continual sobriety one day at a time basis, that can share with us the actual recovery program in living, where in many treatment centers you have got some who are members of AA that are sober maybe only 12 to 16 months more than that brand new when they're sitting there, and all they got is just 16 months of living sober, and that doesn't stack up to a member of AA group who's got 41 and 42 years sober, or 35 or 30 sober, or anything else. Now, don't mistake me, I am not knocking anybody, but this is the big confusion. Here is where we get it. In a treatment modality, you don't get 12 steps. They kick you out, some of them, at the end of the fifth step. They don't even give you a half a program. A lot of them don't even have AA meetings allowed in there. They bus them out to AA meetings. And so we're talking about 12-step work, eyeball to eyeball, one-on-one. You know, this is what this particular statement has to do all about. But the questions arose, and when the word of hope spreading thousands of alcoholics in search of AA, Now, the first intergroups or central offices were usually manned by AA volunteers. But now, most such offices are so busy that full-time employees are needed as well. Naturally, AAs are better suited to such jobs than non-members, but then, are these AAs being paid for doing 12-step work? No. In the office, if they're doing what they're supposed to do, they're just paving the way for an alcoholic to get into maybe a hospital or telling a shaky newcomer where the nearest meeting is. They're helping to make it possible for that alcoholic to hear the message person to person, eyeball to eyeball. That's exactly what treatment centers do, if it's looked at it in that light. They're just getting the alcoholic ready, physically sober, and then getting them ready to hear the real AA message, eyeball to eyeball. A similar development has taken place in our fellowship headquarters. Once a tiny office with a co-founder and one secretary, it's grown into its present general service office, fully staffed with a huge mail room, keeping the lines of communication open throughout AA worldwide. Yeah. The employees are both AA and non-AA. And they're paid on a scale comparable to that in any profit-making business. So the office force can function dependably. As I said yesterday, non-alcoholics, they all handle our money. Thank God they do. They handle our money. But the non-alcoholic rest of staff that is not in accounting and et cetera, they're usually clerical staff, things of that nature. But we have a staff of alcoholic members of AA who serve in various capacities. One of the most important functions is that they are the corresponding secretary to whatever region. This is what's important. Also, staff secretary for the various conference committees, period. And so in these other jobs and assignments, members are actually paid, and then we also have paid employees to, particularly in our publishing and in our layout and art and things of that nature. And I'm going to stop right here and get a break, and so we can come back, if we will, at only hour. And so then we can get out of here by 12 o'clock, if that's all right with your pleasure. Thank you very, very much. And, you know, actually, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, that now I'm talking about our general service office, and also those who work for our AA World Services Incorporated, in the publishing part of that particular incorporation. Members of AA are used, are paid for their skills in writing, in managers, editors, artists, illustrators, as well as their understanding of AA from within and from out. Now, we do use a lot of alcoholic members, volunteers, translators. Now, we're getting more into using professional translators, and most of them that we use now, and when we get into difficult languages that are the type that our paid translators professionally at the United Nations. But we use a lot of them because it's very difficult to translate the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and our literature into a foreign language. Now, one of the most difficult things that we're doing, and I'm just a minute part of it, and that is on the new book the history book of AA to upgrade AA from the time that Bill finished it, AA comes of age, up to a reasonably current time frame. If you one reads the books that Bill was the author, Bill had a very peculiar, unique style of writing. And it's very difficult to have the continuity of his style of writing. And so this is one of the difficulties that we're having. And so, but so we use a lot of volunteers because, as I said, it's very difficult. You have never lived until you have been a member of the Latin American Ibero Translation Committee. That's composed of the members of AA and General Service Offices from Central and South America. My God, they get in there, and you know the Argentinians, they don't like this type, and from Colombia, they don't like the Spanish translation, from Mexico, and Uruguay, and Paraguay, and they get to fighting, and they get to fussing, and I'll tell you, it's something else, and most of them got a short fuse tempers anyway. And they're so serious about their AA. Mexico is the greatest proliferation of translation of our literature that there is, and it's absolutely fantastic. No one realizes, you know, a little country like El Salvador, that's not even as large geographically, maybe half of state of Georgia. They got 42,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Guatemala has got roughly about 32,000. Nicaragua, about 30,000. You can't shake that many up around in the southeast region of the United States. You know, it's the way it is down there. 46% of our membership resides outside the continental limits of North America. And out of that, 98% or 99% of the groups, they open every meeting with a serenity prayer and they close every meeting with a serenity prayer, and they don't hold hands. You don't dare reach out and try to touch the hands of a Muslim in an AA meeting. You allow them to draw back knuckles. Now, I've been in a lot of AA meetings in the United States that you don't dare, if you do hold hands after the meeting and you got a watch or a ring, you better check it after you leave the meeting. You know. But this is the way it is. You see, thank God my sponsor took me to an out-of-town meeting when I was 4 days sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was the greatest thing in the world. I found out that AA didn't get started in the group that I got sober in, as the oldest sober member of that group wasn't Bill Wilson. That AA was everywhere. Everywhere. And it's quite an experience. And to translate, it took 10 years to get a good translation of the big book in German. Why? Because there are 7 definitions of spiritual in the German dictionary. And to fit the one that everyone is comfortable with, it took that long. It certainly does, and we use a lot of translators, particularly if we receive letters from the general office of people who learn their language, street language, you know, not those that are university graduate with PhDs in, let's say, Italian or this or that, where all the grammar is just absolutely and the structure is absolutely perfect. We need to have people who understand the common everyday language, so that they can go back and answer the letters, because we're in the communication business. And you know, one of the reasons are, please take our literature, please take it. It is something else, because it has to do with experience. Now, many do not realize the process that it goes through. And I'm going to use this. This happens to be one of the most popular pieces of literature in Alcoholics Anonymous. We cannot keep it in our literature stands. We do not know where it goes to. That's what happened to Joe, and they have another one, what happened to Alice. This is not the updated one. This is the updated one. And many of us believe that the reason that this piece of literature is so popular is because it appeals to the average intelligence of our membership. Comic book style. Now, when they got ready to do it, Lewis R., who was the first delegate who happened to be black to the General Service Conference, they were in the process at that time of getting it. And Bill was a good friend of Lewis, and he said, "Lewis, what do you think about putting a black face? We're going to have these men at the bar on the front of it." He said, "Fine, as long as it's not mine." Well, this is a four-color press. It has to go to the artist and the illustrator and goes to Ford Press, and they always print the cover before they put the guts in there. And everybody was, this is a milestone. And everybody is waiting for the black face. Well, they comes out, and my God, they looked at it, and Lewis looked at it, and a couple other blacks. It was blue serge black. And they said, "Well, it will offend the mulatto. It'll offend the lighter skinned one. Send it back and lighten it up." So it goes back to the artist and goes back to the illustrator, goes back to the printer, and everybody waits for it to come back. Guess what? It looked like a Chicano. And if any of y'all ever lived in an area where they have blacks and Chicanos, it's just like World War VIII. And they said, "For God's sakes, send it back and darken it up." So they sent it back, and it processed again. Here's the color it came out, chocolate. Not too light, not too dark, universal. This one piece of literature has been one of the greatest instruments in getting in to Alcoholics Anonymous and getting them to believe that they too can be members of AA than any piece of literature we have. Isn't that amazing? All this great recovery program and about alcoholism, and one little simple piece of literature, comic book style, gets people's attention. You know? It certainly does. And it's absolutely phenomenal. And we find that among the Native Americans. And they don't call them Indians anymore, Native Americans. And I could talk an hour about how we got that through the conference, and y'all roll out of the chair and still be laughing 6 weeks later. And it's absolutely how those things come about. And you never know how it is going to affect someone. And basically, other than upgrading the cover, nothing else has been changed because it has been so successful. A good example, they ask us a message to the teenager. Well, the delegate from Sweden at the World Service, and I happened to be, for 2 years, I happened to be chairman of the Translation, Copyright, and Reprint Committee for all of our literature all over the world. And as a result, when the message to the teenager came out from Sweden and Norway and Finland, they all three came and they said, "David, is it all right if we discuss this? We have a little problem with it." And I says, "What's that?" He says, "Well, in your message to the teenager, you've got them driving automobiles. But in the Baltic countries, they ride bicycles." We said, "Fine, put them on the bicycles, but don't change what the wording is up above what they're saying. That's all. We don't care if they're riding the jackass." It's the message that counts. It's the ungarbled message, because it is copyright material, and this is the way that it is. And so as a result of it, that's how AA grows. Now, in Japan, they have done the smartest thing that they could do as far as this alcohol is concerned. Now, AA has grown tremendously in Japan. And as a result, you know, they have exhausted now their fourth printing of the big book. So they went in, and the next, you know what the next book they translated in print? AA Comes of Age. Because they wanted to get the history of AA and how it came about and why it works and what happens as a result of it. And that is, and they are doing tremendously well. And so as a result, that eighth tradition, that's the reason why we create certain jobs. Now, and particularly about talking about that little piece of literature, it took 2 years just to get that face right, you know. And somebody will say, well, what's going on here? Didn't Dr. Bob say keep it simple? That's the precise reason our conference-approved literature expresses the simplicity of our fellowship. Unfortunately, too many of our Group AA literature racks are cluttered up with non-AA literature, and this is what Dr. Bob meant when he said, let's keep it simple and let's don't louse it up with Freudian concepts that appeal to the scientific mind. Tradition 9, AA as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. This is very, very vital to an AA group, as Tradition 8 was very, very vital for group central offices and intergroups. But this is a very, very vital, vital thing. The word, let's keep it simple, was the last that Bill heard from his co-founder of AA, Dr. Bob, shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950. And aware that the word it meant our recovery program, Bill later wrote, we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. But when we get into questions of actions by groups and by areas and by AA as a whole, we find that we must to some extent organize to carry the message or else face confusion, and confusion is not simplicity. Now, when Tradition 9 speaks of AA as such, it goes to the heart of AA's experience, to the spiritual simplicity of one alcoholic saying, sometimes silently, help, and another alcoholic answering, I know how you feel, and I'm here to help you. Such a relationship could not be organized, could it? No, it can't. It's just like sponsorship in AA. Many look at it and say it's haphazard. That's the reason why it works, it's haphazard. Because you can't work with two different people the same way. There are not two people exactly alike in this world. If they were, one would be useless. Some you work with, you can talk nice and quiet to. Some you have to holler at a little bit. Some you have to cuss at. Some you have to get a baseball bat and beat them in the head. And sponsorship and working with drunks, it's touch and feel. You have to touch a lot of alcoholics to find them warm enough, and then you pitch them in the tent and go out and get another one. That'll take the bait, you know. And so it comes about as a result of experience, you know. But the main thing is, I know how you feel. I'm here to help you. You know, and as a result, it can't be organized. And, well, you say, well, with the modern computerization, you get a profile, you know, of all your members in the group, and you get a new one come in, and you let him fill out one of these profile sheets. And then you go down to the computer house and you tell the new one, now, we've got a new deal here on sponsorship. You know, some of them have been assigning you a sponsorship. Some don't want a sponsorship. Some want a sponsorship. Well, we've got a new deal. We've got a computerized program. We've got a profile of every one of our members. And now we've got your profile, and tonight the secretary is going down to the computer house, and they're going to drop it in the top of this thing, and down at the bottom there's going to come out two cards. The card of your sponsor who matches your profile exactly, and your card. Now that sounds logical, and it sounds right under the modern computerization scientific methods that we have, except one thing. The time the one comes from all the profiles of the member and drops down to be their sponsor, they could be drunk. Yes. If there's one thing, we'll never be able to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is to computerize the language of the heart, because it comes from within, and it's an inside job. And that's what separates it from the scientific. It separates it from the material, or in other words, what is it? It is the freedom of the human spirit to live sober in this world. But by actions in groups, we find that we need some degree of organization. You know, if somebody doesn't get up the program, doesn't answer the phone, doesn't make the coffee, doesn't open up the doors, doesn't lay out the literature, what's the result? No coffee, no literature, no program. So in order to avoid such a disaster, in some groups, some members volunteer to be responsible for preparing meeting refreshments. Some the group votes on as a trusted servant. And all the way from coffee brewers to trustees on the General Service Board, those of us who take part in service activities, and I don't like to use the word work. If there's anything our kind hate, is work. Service activities, we are assuming responsibility but not taking on authority. There are no authorities in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so as a result of it, Tradition 8 is geared to where we can form our committee, but always remember, responsible to those who they serve. Not to themselves, not to any organization or anything that they are serving to, but the ones that we serve. They're ours. That's all. And then rotate, and we get some more. But one of the keys to better rotation, and we find this as a result of bitter experience, that alternates should be either appointed, elected, or volunteered to each service activity in Alcoholics Anonymous, so that you can't just say, well, we can't find anybody to do it. Joe, it'll be good for you. Well, any time you're going to start appointing somebody in AA because it'll be good for them, look out. Look out. Look out. But this way, then you have a fresh crop coming up at all times. And then those you sponsor, those you sponsor. Oh, you're responsible to make coffee? Gather up all your babies, your new ones particularly, and have them there making coffee and laying out the coffee. That's the best way to meet members of Alcoholics Anonymous when you're new, you know. Yeah, but I'm shaking. Well, that's all right. Coffee never hurt anybody, you know. Be there. That is the key, the whole crux to continuation of service. And that is to, and incidentally, when you're in service, it's just like I was telling Cordy. It's just like when you're in service, it's just, really, it's just like standing there kicking an elephant in the rear end. The whole key is to stay on there and keep kicking. And then one day, smoke comes out, you see? But in doing it, we learn a lot, but the main thing is we ain't got time to take a drink. Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Now we think and we believe that the future of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon Tradition 10 of AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. And since AA began, AA never has been divided by a major controversial issue. But as by some deep instinct, we have known that from the very beginning, that no matter what the provocation, we must never publicly take sides in the name of Alcoholics Anonymous in any fight, even a worthy one. We have to remember, however, that this reluctance to fight one another, anybody else, is not counted on as a special virtue which makes us feel superior to other people. Nor does it mean that the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who have been restored are now being restored and who will be restored as citizens of the world or their community are going to back away from their individual responsibilities to act as they see fit on issues of the time, as long as when they participate in the public, they do not put the two words Alcoholics Anonymous after their name. Because some get involved in controversy. It's just as bad to oppose a controversy as it is to endorse it. But when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, that's a different matter. As a whole, we do not enter into public controversy, because we know that our fellowship will perish if we do. We survive and grow and spread because we know that Alcoholics Anonymous is something of greater importance than any weight that we could collectively throw back at other causes. Recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us, and we wish to preserve its full strength because why? It's our only means of survival. Now, the Washingtonian Society, a movement among alcoholics which started in Baltimore over a century and a half ago, almost discovered the answer to alcoholism. And at first, that society was composed entirely of alcoholics trying to help other alcoholics. Now, the Washingtonian Society had passed the 500,000 mark in 2 years. When I got sober in April of 67, AA got started in 1935, and in 32 years, that doesn't count the ones that had passed away that were sober members of AA, but at that time, they estimated in 67 that there were roughly 375 or 380,000 members in North America. That's all. Now, it's hard to estimate how many members we really have, because we are not in that kind of business. Because when the sun went up all over the world today, God knows how many millions are members of AA. But when the sun goes down tonight all over the world, a lot of them that were members when they woke up will not be members anymore. They've been drinking. So ours is kind of like a floating crap game, you know. We have to sort of estimate how many. You'd be surprised how many thousands of AA groups are not even listed. Yet they get the same services as anyone else. Don't contribute, don't do anything. Yet they get the same services as any other, because we want to be sure. And in time, and it's a process of education. But the Washingtonians, God, had they stuck to their one goal, they might have found the full answer. Instead, the Washingtonians permitted politicians, reformers, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, to use their society for their own purposes. They took violent issues on the slavery sides on the slavery issues. Some Washingtonians become temperance crusaders, and within a very few years, they had completely lost their effectiveness in helping alcoholics, and their society collapsed. Many members of AA and society believes that Alcoholics Anonymous is the first one to get started here in the United States. No, they came over, programs came over on the Mayflower. But most of them have gone by the wayside. There were deals, they didn't have a maintenance recovery program. Or if they had them, like the one that Peabody. And he formed a group to help alcoholics stay sober, get you a new hobby. You know, if you were swimming, play golf. Incidentally, he's the one that coined the first phrase, and we use it today, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And old Peabody and his crew, they just disappeared. The Jacobi Society, which got started in New England and Massachusetts, it still has a very, very, very small membership, but most of them have gone by the wayside. And Bill used the experience of the Washingtonian Society in their beginning and their fall and their rise as a result of the basis of this particular tradition. And so we're not incorporated as a legal instrument, that is Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, with which to attack anyone, no matter how severe the provocation. Yes, our two publishing entities, AA World Services Incorporated and the AA Grapevine Incorporated, yes, if they have a copyright on any of their copyright holdings, of which our books and everything else is, and incidentally, the big book, you know, the copyright ran out. They thought that it did. They didn't. They really suspicioned it in 1952 when they were getting ready to print the first printing of the 1212. And so they found out, and then later on, as what came to light, that the first 164 pages were in the public domain and had been in the public domain, but no one is going to get the prints, the plates, and print it when you can buy it for what you can buy it in AA, and you're going to buy the same book for $30. That's what that book is worth on the open market today if you had to start out and start printing it again. And incidentally, just as a side, Works Publishing Company violated its own copyright in 1941 when it put out the second printing of the first edition, because in the second printing of the first edition they changed the one word in the 12th step where it used to say having had a spiritual experience. They changed the word experience to awakening, and they added appendices 2 in the back of the book. And anytime you have an initial copyright and you change anything, whatever it is, or add to it or delete from it, and you do not go back and have it recopyrighted, you've violated your copyright. Now that's one of the reasons why on our logos they're changing those for the chips and everything else. You see, the circle and the triangle is a registered trademark. It was registered in 1962. It was redone in 72. It was done because of the misuse, not outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, but because of the members inside Alcoholics Anonymous. And once you have anything registered or copyright, if it's ever violated, if you do not pursue it, then you lose it. That's the reason that we have to do it. So now that's the reason on those little medallions that they give out, you know, the triangle, and they took the AA off the backside, AA off, and they got you just the year of sobriety. Instead of recovery, unity, and service, it's recover, unit, serve. But the two AAs are off of it now. And that was done because they didn't know that was they were doing it, you know. No one ever brought it to their attention. And if a token means that much to your sobriety, you better check your hold card, I'll tell you. You better check your hold card. Yeah. I like what they give over here in Georgia, and I got one of them. Looks like a piece of Swiss cheese that's beginning to get so many holes in that silver dollar, you know. Yeah. And as a result, and it's quite a conversation piece when you go through airport security, I'll tell you. They won't know what kind of dollar that is, you know. And so AA is a fellowship, not necessarily an organization, because we believe that a spiritual faith and a way of life cannot be incorporated. But AA will grow and survive and live so long as it remains a spiritual faith and a way of life open to all men and women who suffer from alcoholism. Tradition 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The two letters TV have not been added to this tradition. Because in order to change the wording, any word, any comma, any period of the 12 steps or the 12 traditions, and now the short form of the concepts, which are in the bylaws of the General Service Board, then it takes 3/4 of the AA groups all over the world to vote on that change, whatever it may be, in a minimum of 6 months' time. Doesn't mean it can't be changed, but if you've been to one of your group business meetings, have you gotten 3/4? And you ain't going to wait 6 months, you know. Yeah. And so it hasn't been added to it. And you say, well, why not? Well, very simple. Radio is audio and films is video. That's the reason. Now, the alcoholic who has recovered and who is recovering and who will recover through our program is himself or herself the strongest attraction that AA has. Now, there are not but three absolutes in alcoholics' lungs, and that is absolute abstinence from alcohol, the absolute freedom for any alcoholic to become a member of AA or leave AA, and absolute anonymity on the public level. It says we need always. It don't say we ought to. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the public, at the level of press, radio, and film. Now, we're talking about on the public media in this particular tradition. Because, you see, if you still ask many members today what led them to seek AA help, the answer given most often is an AA member. Now, we hear so many who come from treatment centers, and we say, well, look how many we're getting. They got a pamphlet in the room out there on a survey on our last membership, and you will find that the biggest percentage still come right from the street. You have to remember that alcohol is the greatest 12-stepper that AA really has. Now, our chances would have been slim if the groups had remained completely in hiding, but many of us chose to tell our friends, our neighbors, our employers, our co-workers, our physicians, our clergymen, that we are in AA, and when we do this, we are not violating our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition. Now, suppose a sick alcoholic has never had the good fortune to meet an AA. How are they going to find us? And his or her search will be difficult if the local group thinks it should be anonymous too. Now, the tradition is talking about personal anonymity, remember? No alcoholic will be attracted to AA if he or she doesn't know that it exists, or if he or she has a distorted, unfavorable impression of its members or its program. Now, giving the general public an accurate picture of AA is basically the chief job of the Public Information Committee. And any other committee that treatment facilities, cooperation with the special community, and correctional facilities committees, any that gives out to the general public, because a lot of them are put out on their videos and several other things, of which we have experience on, if we're asked to do those things, how they should be handled and how they shouldn't be. In addition, they often carry the message to certain groups, from police officials to personnel directors whose work includes frequent contact with active alcoholics. Now, information about AA is being offered to the public on all the communication media and print and over the air. Now, and on radio, it's easy to guard a member's anonymity. Of course, television, which was not in wide use when this tradition was written, that's another matter. And according to the conference experience and advisory action, an AA member is breaking his or her anonymity when he or she is identified on television as a member of AA and their face is shown whether or not his or her name is given, because it is the face, the recognizable face, plus the fact hooked up with the two words Alcoholics Anonymous, that is the anonymity break. And you say, well, you turn on the television on the morning show and the noon show and the afternoon show and the 6 o'clock show and this show and that, and here they've got this member of Alcoholics Anonymous and he's grinning and I'm a member of AA and all this and all that, you know. But you know what? Do they give you a sobriety tape? You won't see someone that's sober 35, 40 years on there. And who do you see? You don't see somebody that's been sober 35 or 40 years that's been sponsoring and active in the group? No. You don't see just some bum. What do you see? You see a recognizable face from the past that has been famous in athletics, or in the arts, or in television, or sports, or things of that nature. Now, who gets them on there? They're agents. They want to bring the credibility back that, look, idiot here is sober. He deserves, or she deserves, another chance. You know? Another chance. But you don't see the ones that have been active in AA and working in AA, you know. Now, I'm going to share an experience with you. Professional football, a baseball team in one of the America West League came to play the professional team in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the Rangers. And the sports writers were out there. And so, and that was when it became popular, you know, for athletes now to start going to treatment. And so there were three well-known on this particular team, and so the sports writers were interviewing them. And they said to them, and it was written up, and it said, are you still sober? Oh, yeah. Well, are you still going to AA? Yes. Well, do you go to AA meetings when you're on the road, out of town? Oh, yes. Well, one of them asked them, how do you like AA? Are you ready for this answer? One of them said, we love it because that's where we find all the hot broads. Well, I'll admit we've got a few that are overcooked in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we know that is not true. We know that's not true. But that goes out to, and kids, young kids, read it, that are heroes, they're heroes and everything else. Well, I want you to know, they've got 7 AA groups in that area, and their phones rang off the wall for a week wanting to know when the hot broads meet. Well, what do? You never have to defend the truth, but sometimes you have to take the bull by the horn. So I picked up the phone and I called the publisher of that newspaper. And I said, say, have you read your morning sports page? He says, no. I said, read it and call me back. And he did. He said, my gosh, that's not true. And I said, well, do you know that every September, every daily newspaper, every semi-weekly, weekly magazine, monthly, semi-monthly magazine gets a letter from our General Service Public Information Desk explaining our traditions on anonymity and ask you to cooperate with us if possible? No, I didn't know that. Well, I suggest you find out what happened to that letter and call me Mike. And if you can't find the letter, I'll send you the letter and you have it Xeroxed and you give it to every one of your interviewing reporters and also to your department heads. And I said, the reason you don't know anything about this is, yes, you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and have been for 3 years, but the only time we ever see you in AA is on your birthday night, or else when they've got a social or at somebody's house after an open meeting, but you're never there working with drunks or anything else. And I said, you're ignorant about why AA was there when you needed to get help. Now, you see, I could talk to him that way because he calls me his sponsor. Yeah. I said, he calls me his sponsor. You know, many of you, when you're in AA for a while, you'll find that many will call you their sponsor for convenience. And you smile, thank you, and go on about your business. That's tough love when you talk that way to others. Oh, that's tough love. They will do that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, David's my sponsor when they're off out in the wilds out here somewhere. And they found out I've been in a little rabbit Australia, made a talk somewhere, and they think, by God, it got out on tape, it's really important. And it really isn't. It isn't. That's all. We just all have a unique role to play in AA. Some more, some less. That's all. All we're asked to do is to go when asked, if free to go. That's all. And share our experiences. And that's all. And then dump it and go about the business of living. That's all. And so as a result, there are different techniques that are used, you know, as far as this is concerned, you know. And we have all the guidelines. Now, one of the best ways not to violate your anonymity on the public level is don't get up on the public level. That's all. I'm going to share two experiences with you. I was on a radio talk show, and that's where they call in. You know, and you usually have a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and both a male and a female, and you have a member of Al-Anon and sometimes an Al-Ateen, and some of them will not use their correct first name. I always say, I'm David. I don't say, hey, and I don't tell them how I make a living or anything else, you know, and that's it. And we're on one of those things, and you get every kind of call in the world, from every kook in the world, every sane person in the world that'll call in. You'll get members of Alcoholics Anonymous that'll try to disguise their voice and ask trick questions. Then you get the drunk that calls in. Then you'll get some religious person who firmly believes that their church and their religion is the only way for a drunk to live, and they'll argue with you for a while, and we just say thank you and we love you. And so about 11:45 one night, and I happen to be on the show, there's a little youngster that's supposed to be sleeping, and he's listening to the radio. And he runs in, and he wakes his mother up, and he says, Mama, wake up. Our dentist is on the radio, and he's a drunk. Now, about 2 weeks later, that little monster had an appointment with me. His mother come dragging him in, and he said, now, before you start on Junior here, how long have you been a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous? At that time, I believe it was 12 years. He said, my father and your little patient's grandfather passed away this past December, and he was 19 consecutive years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm one of these, and it's happened too many times, I'm one of these firmly believers, as long as we stick to the principles of AA, we hear good things about members of AA. Good things about members of AA. Now, on the other one, it's when they had the election between Carter and Ford. And when the country went to sleep that night, they really didn't know who was going to be the President of the United States. And every Wednesday morning, I have an appointment at down barbershop downtown, and I got to get up very early and ride the freeway. And so I get up, and I very seldom turn on television, because I found that the best time to talk to God in the morning is driving on a freeway in a busy city. And so I turned on the television in my bedroom, and I went into my bathroom, and it's a long wall with a full mirror. And I put the hot water on my face, and I put the lather on my face, and right as the razor gets ready to come down, I hear two female voices coming out of that television box. One is strange, but the other is very familiar. It sounds like my wife. And I looked in the mirror, and I started to have a conversation with me, and I said, now, David, you haven't had a drink of alcohol, and you're not hearing them voices. So I stick my head around the corner, and there on television, the strange voice was the moderator with her full face. But the other one had her backside of her head. Now, I'm more familiar with my wife's backside than I am her front side, I don't want to tell you. and they're talking about me. And that moderator says to her, from what you have told me, that when your husband was drinking, he was a nasty, incorrigible, drinking, drunk, and alcoholic. And she says this, you are being very kind when you describe him in that manner.
The last time I got locked up in jail.
And she calmly says, that's what you mean by live and let live, Buster. Ha, ha, ha. And hung up, you know. Yeah. Yeah. And as a result, you know, and that's the way it, and that's the way it, because you see, they recognized her voice. They recognized her voice on cover. They certainly did. But you couldn't tell it by the back of her head, and she never mentioned Al-Anon, you know. She didn't mention that I'm in AA or anything like that. She certainly didn't. There was just an information program about how to get help. Then the station gave the information about where to help, you see. And so as a result, we found that by our experience, that it is better to let our attraction and let our friends recommend us. Although this is not the exact words, the traditional living in long form essentially says this: it's better to let our friends recommend us than for us to go around blowing our horn, bragging how great we are. Because none of us in this meeting, or no one in Alcoholics Anonymous, can absolutely prove and sure anyone, any place, anywhere, that they'll be sober, or I'll be sober next week, next month, next year, or 5 years from now. But I'm not taking a drink of alcohol today. Yeah. Because they have seen that happen so many times. So many times. There was a tremendous lady. She got involved in some things in outside of AA, promoting the illness, the alcoholism. She broke her anonymity. She received an Oscar on television. She spoke in a lot of areas all over the world, in which Alcoholics Anonymous are active. And it wasn't long after you received that Oscar and given all the credit to Alcoholics Anonymous that there she was, a picture of her laying on a gurney as she's been wheeled into the county hospital in Los Angeles for being drunk and overdosed. With big headlines. This is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about. To be just a simple human being, thankful for God's grace through the miracle of the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we can keep that foremost in our vision one day at a time, then we begin to appreciate what it was. But thank God, as I said, due to AA's containing power of obedience to a principle, and what's the principle? God as we understand him. We have very, very few that are violating their anonymity on the public level. And those that do, sooner or later, they either come to see the nature of their problem, or they're eliminated, one of the two. It's just like last year, when everything, a lot in AA got this big furor about on the front cover of the weekly magazines that are so popular, you know,
Time, Business Week, News Day, and all, et cetera, et cetera. And the member of AA, full face and anonymity, and wrote this book about our co-founder, Bill. I'll guarantee you that 90% that read it can't even remember her last name, much less her first name last year, nor what the title of the book is. That's how fleeting. You say, well, why don't they have of course, that was a wonderful fill on Bill, on Hallmark of Saint, but let me explain something to you. The reason they've never made a full-feature movie on Bill, or about, because it plays to a limited market. And they're in the business of making money. It plays to a limited market. That's all. Who buys our books? We do. General public don't buy it. Who buys our literature? We do. General public doesn't buy it. But everybody in the field of recovery wants our book because why? It is so successful. And the reason that it is so successful is they don't tell you what to do, they tell you how to do it. That's the reason it is so successful. Run that around your head a little bit. They don't tell you what to do or you better do it, they just simply tell you this is how we did it. That's all. And if you want it, fine. And if you don't want it, fine too. And so we have seen anonymity is a protectious coat that covers our whole society. It is more protection. It has another dimension, a spiritual dimension, and this leads to Tradition 12. And Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Let us always remember that anonymity, not taking credit for our own or another's recovery, is humility at work. If I'm going to take credit to get another human being sober, then I have to take the credit if they get drunk again. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is the root, a simple expression of what? Humility. When we use the 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, we're each trying to achieve real humility, to put our self-respect on a solid base of truth rather than fantasies and fictions about ourselves. When we use the 12 traditions to work together in AA, we're all trying to achieve humility, not only as individual members, but by recognizing our true place in our AA group and AA's true place as a fellowship, by recognizing also true place in the world in which we live in. Because we have to be reminded that we are not recovering on our own, that we should control our personal desires and ambitions in order to guard the unity of our group and our fellowship. All of us are just alcoholics together, and that we have no rules or regulations. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. We don't want to advertise our fellowship as only for those, the rich and the famous. We don't want to sell our program as a surefire remedy in the extravagant terms or promotional campaign. When we're given special responsibilities within AA, they are defined as opportunities to serve, not titles to flaunt in each other's faces. The humility of the fellowship itself is safeguarded by Tradition 10 with a refusal to set ourselves up as general authorities swinging and throwing our collective weight around in the public's eye. But more important, the 12 traditions remind us we have something stronger than our human personalities to fall back on. Our principles come first, and they are not our own invention.
You see, our traditions were written not because of our good behavior, but because of our bad behavior. And we have to remember, we're not brothers and sisters of virtue, but brothers and sisters of defects of character. And our willingness to have them removed under the power and love and the guidance of a power greater than ourselves. And with this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. I want to thank this district for allowing this alcoholic to be here yesterday and this morning with you. And you have given far more to me than I could ever possibly share with you. And all I can wish for each and every one of you is to stay sober. Help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Get involved in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Get involved. AA has 36 spiritual principles, 12 steps of recovery, 12 traditions of unity, and 12 concepts of world service. And if we can get into 36 steps, not limit ourselves to, well, I'm sober and I got a big book and that's all I need, where is the gratitude and where is the thankfulness? Because we don't know. Because AA has been given to us, but by the same token, it's not only been given to us by sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but that giving has been preserved by sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous who were willing to sacrifice fame and fortune and prestige because of their gratefulness and thankfulness for what's been given to them in their life. And they were good enough and kind enough to pass it on to us. Because it is in the passing on. In AA we have some paradoxes. What we give away, we retain. And what we lose, we gain. And when we die, all we're going to have left is that which we have given away. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you, and I love you so much.